This Much We Know is a podcast offering an honest and informative perspective of the realities and motivations of setting up a social enterprise. We will be joined by a number of charity leaders and social entrepreneurs whose trading models work to end homelessness. We will be sharing their stories, tips, and of course, their facepalm moments. Homeless Link is the national membership charity for organisations working directly with people who become homeless in England. We work to make services better and campaign for policy change that will help end homelessness. Homeless Link members get access to benefits that support you to build and develop your organisation and ensure your voice and experience is heard at a national, regional and local level. To find out more about Homeless Link membership for your organisation, visit homeless.org.uk/join.
Welcome to the podcast, guys. So we're joined by Leon and Joe from Beyond Food. Probably safer if you do your own introductions, because if we do it, you might not recognise yourself.
Hello, my name's Leon. I work at Beyond Food Foundation. I'm the chef trainer for the charity.
Brilliant.
And I'm Joe. I also work for Beyond Food and Brigade Bar and Kitchen, which is in Tooley Street under Bridge. And I do fundraising, partnerships and engagement.
Tell us a bit about Beyond Food and what you do and why you do it.
So Beyond Food is a charity, and Brigade Bar and Kitchen is a social enterprise restaurant. So the charity, they work hand in hand, and the charity supports people who are vulnerable and are kind of unraveling, in an unraveling state. We used to talk about homelessness and people coming out of homelessness, but we've broadened that post-COVID. So many people are struggling with mental health and, you know, just life in general, really. So we take people that need to get back on their own two feet, and we use food as our catalyst to do that. And obviously the restaurant supports us in that by giving people work experience in the restaurant so they can get back into hospitality if they want to, or any other industry where the skills are transferable. And obviously Leon does the training for that.
Yeah, so what does the training look like, Leon? How many people?
Training, so we do various parts of training. So we've got one program which is called Beyond the Classroom, and that is a 20-week program where we work with students that are in our PRU unit, which is, so they're not in mainstream education, but each journey that they go on each week, it takes them down another level. So for example, next week we are going to E5 Bakehouse. We're going to be making bread all day long. The week after that, we're going to be in the restaurant. We're going to go to the supermarket next door. I'm going to give them a budget to cook on, and they're going to come back and recreate that meal and get that recipe. So it's just teaching them various skills. So that one alone, they're learning computer skills. They're doing a bit of maths. They're doing a bit of budgeting, and they're doing practical food skills.
Brilliant. Sounds good. That sounds good. So that's young people.
That's young.
In sort of the, people referral unit.
Yeah.
System or alternative ed. Okay.
Other programs that we run. So we run another program called Fresh Life, which we've just finished, which is a 3-week program, which has got various different pieces in it. It's got an element of food in it. So I'll do 4 to 5 sessions with them in the kitchen. I'm doing everything from stocks to sauces to fish to chicken, just teaching them the foundations of cooking. Not as a chef, they're life skills that actually they could learn how to follow a recipe correctly, and then they're halfway there. They also do some employability skills around that. We also get outside agencies to come in and deliver some workshops for them for things that we think that actually are life skills that will benefit them going down the road. Another thing to mention, Brigade is also a live fire restaurant, so that is our USP. Everything that we do downstairs is live fire, so we cook over oak wood and nice charcoal, and it's an open kitchen as well. So when the students from Fresh Life are finished with us, they actually do 3 weeks work experience, and that is everything from on the floor to the front of house to actually just greeting a customer, asking them how was their day.
And that's in the restaurant?
In the restaurant itself, Brigade.
Okay, and does the restaurant run independently for profit, and then the training links into that? What's the sort of structural relationship between them?
Well, it's a social enterprise, so they work hand in hand. So obviously we supply the beneficiaries that go into the restaurant, but the restaurant generates income that supports the charity. So they really do dovetail really well. The restaurant does so much per plate on give back. So people that dine there know that they're giving back to the charity with every meal that they have there. And yeah, it's a case of us working to each other's strengths. So we support and progress the work experience into the restaurant, and they then progress them onto work.
It's really good. What's the sort of backstory to Beyond Food in terms of where did it come from? Was there somebody that set it up?
Yeah, chef founder Simon Ball, he had the vision. And actually, there's no greater word than hearing it from his mouth himself. But basically, he had this vision. He always wanted to help people that were homeless, and actually volunteered his time when the tsunami happened, he went out there and done a relief camp. And then from then, he always had this vision where he wanted to help people that are not only homeless, that stay homeless. And he came back and had the idea. He actually went on Dragon's Den before he had the business with the ideas. The Dragon's Den gave him the money. But it sparked something. And then he approached PwC with the idea, and the rest is history.
So, I mean, that was 17 years ago. Simon started the charity. But we've been in Brigade Bar and Kitchen for 12 years now. 12 years. So we've been in partnership with PwC. And in many different guises, you know, we've had renovations and different management support. At the moment, it's CSEs. They've been really good to us. They've been, I think they've been doing a year so far. That without that sort of support from corporate.
So that joint enterprise, I think, is really important, that collaboration.
Yeah, and the customers coming in the door know it. I guess some of them do know because you communicate it. But the other, you just get walk-in trade, come into the restaurant, they've got no idea that you're not. That you're not just a regular restaurant.
You wouldn't look at the restaurant and think it was a social enterprise by any means. You know, it's really quite high end. But when you sit in the restaurant, it kind of tells the story around you very subtly. We don't put it in anybody's faces, and no one would know who the beneficiaries are and who are employees. So it's very subtle. But when people sit down, there's table talkers where, you know, they can learn a little bit more. And all of our staff talk about it in the restaurants. So, you know, do you know the purpose behind what we do?
And is the open fire part of the USP?
Part of it, because half the time, for me, or for a lot of people, as a chef or as a person, when you go somewhere to eat, you want to see who's cooking your food. You want to see how good they look. You want to smell those smells, those are rubbish. You want to hear the banging of the kitchen. And actually having it open lets everybody do that. And it just brings that warmth out as well. You can see the live fire. It's not every day you're going to see a live fire in front of your face, seeing your steak getting cooked.
Is that part of the USP that it is high end and it's a bit of an experience? Do you feel as a social enterprise that's a really important part of the package, that it's high end and high quality as well as being socially?
Simon has always said it's good food and good hospitality first and foremost. The charity, the element and the social aspect of behind it is second to what the person's experience should be coming into the restaurant.
So it's really good to hear, because Murphy and I have been working on the enterprise development program, and There's quite a lot of organisations that start out in the social enterprise journey with like, oh yeah, we're like them, but we do cleaning and we employ people in recovery from homelessness. And we always have to give the hard message, actually, that's, you need to compete on quality first. And well, my stance on that is maybe not the EDP, but my stance is let's compete on quality, and then the social stuff is the icing on the cake, the real added benefit.
And we fully expect to be judged on that as well. You know, we expect people that we put into the restaurant to give good service, and we always aim for the best level, not make excuses for it.
What do you feel the main challenges are at the moment, sort of post-COVID, you know, in the world that is right now?
For me personally, funding is a huge challenge. So many charities are vying for the same pots of money, so it's becoming harder and harder. So we are trying to be more innovative in how we use our space. So we try to partner with corporate clients and run events alongside our beneficiary programs. And what that means is people can really feel and touch what we're all about and know that the money that they're bringing in to the restaurant and to the charity is having a huge impact. So we run some really great, unique experiences. And funding in general is becoming more and more difficult for many charities.
Yeah, we're seeing that across the sector, I think, definitely. And there's, you know, lack of commitment from funders on what their plans are going to be, particularly for this kind of multi-year funding that we've been used to.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, the enterprise program that we work on is all around diversifying income, right? How to become less reliant on particular sources so that organisations aren't in a difficult position. And Leon, what about you? What challenges, I think, working with the trainees and people in the course, how's that process? Yeah. Well, in general, I guess, anything you want to share?
What I found is COVID, actually. Let's start with COVID, because COVID was a time where everything went down. Our numbers went down. We had to actually cease trading. We had apprentices at that time. They were on apprenticeship with us. We had to actually go into online and teaching them how to cook from my home and time and time, and we all sharing it between us. But we carried on that commitment, because our staff, one thing you'll find about every single member of staff in Brigade, they're dedicated, they're proud, they're passionate about the job they're doing. It's not just a job, it's a job for life. It's a rewarding job. You go home, some days you might have a little snivel, some days you might smile, some days you wake up in the morning and say, yeah, I'm going to work and I love what I'm going to do. But it's been challenging because our numbers have been right down. We used to have 20 people at a time. I used to be training at least 15 people at a time. Now I'm training at least 5. In a smaller thing, but sometimes it's challenging. Those five could be the most challenging five individuals ever. The other thing we've found is that sometimes people have been referred to these courses. On day one, you're asking them, do you know why you're here? They haven't got a clue why they're here sometimes. It's just someone that's actually sent them there. And, oh, it's a cooking course. It's not just a cooking course. It's something that actually could change your life forever if you commit to it. Some people are not ready. Some people have had bad mental health problems since COVID. And sometimes we don't actually know the whole of their past. And not to say that we need to, but it has impacted us in certain ways.
Yeah, a lot of the work that we do is about breaking down people's barriers. So understanding what they've been through and what those barriers look like to them is really quite important for us. So we really strive to find beneficiaries who have a network around them. So having a key worker that's working alongside them so that we've got that kind of support around, and it's not just us and them, because we sometimes need somebody else to go to understand, you know, a reaction or what could be a trigger for them. Or if they need external support like therapy, we're not always in the right position to gain that for them. So having a key worker or somebody to do the referral is quite important.
Another big barrier I'd say, that is, it goes back to when we were doing apprenticeships, is maths and English. I see it as a big barrier for a lot of people, because actually they want to get qualified, but now any qualification they've got to do, they have to have a certain level of maths and English. A lot of our people we're dealing with haven't been in school or college or any kind of learning in maybe 20 years plus. So that is still a barrier, but at the moment we've addressed that, because actually we've created a unique 3 weeks work experience where they don't need maths and English. Actually, they're learning communication skills on the job. We may do a little something with them online, but it's not, you have to have this for you to proceed in life.
Yeah, and I mean, some of our beneficiaries may have gone into prison really young, at sort of 19, 20, and they've come out in their 30s. Well, the world's a completely different place. You know, internet, mobile phones, all of that, you know, is an upskilling, and it's a really quick journey that they need to catch up really quickly. Even managing your bank account now, you know, on a smartphone, it's all completely new to them. So our 3 week program really takes them from, you know, the basics. So we spend the first week really looking at what the boundaries are for them, how they're struggling as an individual. And it really is on a one-to-one basis. And then weeks two and three is about, once their barriers have started to come down, kind of investigating what's next for you and where do you need the support. And we kind of plug the gaps that aren't there and then move them forward into work.
And you say we, you just told me just before, you're a tiny team, aren't you, doing all this?
Yeah.
What do you find as a small, tight team of five could do more than...
We all know what our job is, but we also know each other's roles and can jump in at any point. And because the charity only employs people with lived experience, so we're all relatable to our beneficiaries, so it's really important that they feel that as well. We often talk about our stories with them, and kind of it immediately brings down barriers and relaxes them to identify, actually, you are no different to me. So,
and that's really important, isn't it? Because I think, yeah, certainly some parts of the homeless sector has been professionalised in a way, and yeah, we're sort of working back again to lived experience, aren't we?
And I think as well, it's sort of understanding that at a small team, we're not faceless. Everybody knows what everyone does. The beneficiaries all come back and know us individually. And so they'll walk through the door and there's that warm, friendly family hug feeling. And that's what we strive to continue to do. We're a family. As soon as we sit down that first week, we eat together and they cook lunch with Leon, and we sit around a big family table and we talk to one another. And, you know, it's that we are a family that they may not have anywhere else.
That's brilliant. I think the concept of food across, you've mentioned a couple of things today outside of the restaurant and the kind of, you know, employability side of it. There was Leon, you mentioned earlier, kind of learning to cook and it being actually something that a lot of people don't know, you know, living on your own, living independently, it can become a massive barrier to living a healthy life if you don't know what to do with things. And then also what you just touched on of sort of kind of that sharing, you know, it's such an equalizer, isn't it, food, like splitting bread, it, you know, goes back, it's such a powerful thing. Is that why food's been the catalyst? Obviously, Simon's background as a chef. Is that something that you feel passionate about across the organisation?
Well, I feel very passionate about it, because if it weren't for food, I would not be where I am today. I did an apprenticeship. I've been in a lot of those experiences that maybe some of our beneficiaries have. So I look back and I tell them, actually, you know what? Get your head down. Anything is possible. Commit to something. I've committed to something for 18 years. I've never been unemployed, whereas before I was my life was destined to be unemployed.
And the sort of ability to, I guess, provide for yourself in having those skills of being able to cook and take ingredients and, you know, and the test that you said of giving you know, the guys some cash to go into the shop and then be able to put something together. You know, those things are so, unless you've had someone teach you that at home, it's really not accessible information. You know, school doesn't do that really. But yeah, what kind of impact does that have for the guys that you work with?
Massive. So smile, the heart, they'll go back and do something creative for their family. They'll actually understand, rather than, wait a minute, I can make a curry, a rice, a condiment, some bread for half the price, even quarter of the price that I would spend on a takeaway. Yeah, I can still have takeaways, but it's about that education on showing them actually food don't need to be expensive. Thing like making bread, it's the best satisfaction ever. I did it with the kids recently and they were like, oh my gosh, I've never done it. Never been around someone, done bread, flour, water, yeast, and your hands and time and energy and love. And that's it.
And watching that process as well, where you can take a stock to a soup and seeing actually nothing gets wasted. Yeah. You know, use the bones of the chicken that you just used to make stock. The stock then becomes a soup and it progresses, which you do as well.
Yeah, and I've done the same glasses, exact same glasses for the whole 10 years I've been there. We don't need to change it. Even sometimes someone say like, oh, so you think it's a bit boring? I'm like, it's not boring. They're effective. They, you know, they get so much out of them. And actually, we take one chicken, for example. We did it last Thursday. We did six different dishes with chicken. Showed them how to dissect a chicken. Oh, the legs are braised, the breast is done goujons, and this is done that. Okay, yeah, so some of it sounds a bit fancy, but actually it's showing you. One chicken, £4.
And this, it's the key skills as well. So it's, you know, about deboning a chicken, it's filleting a fish. We take them through barista training. So there's so many different elements they can go away and find jobs that are relevant to those skills that we've taught them. Or they can just go and cook for their family. Either way, you can't not be impacted.
For you, where does the biggest impact fit? You talked about having the guys sitting down together and eating. Where for you, along that sort of process of training and then work experience in the restaurant, what, is there a magic ingredient that where it just becomes the most impactful part of the program? Or?
I think the beneficiaries have their own magic ingredient. Everyone is different and everyone finds their way and where that barrier breaks down for them. And watching that happen, and you do see it very clearly, watching that happen is really key for us because it's like a light bulb moment. And then obviously when the beneficiaries get to the end of their 3 weeks and they're ready to, with their CV to go, I think I know where I'm going next, we make those introductions. Going back to see them in their workplace, because we handhold even once they're in workplace, we never let anybody go. And that includes 15 years on, Jan is still sending people Merry Christmas and birthday messages, which they love, by the way. But yeah, making sure that they're still comfortable in their own skin, in the job they're in, and seeing those people thriving in restaurants and, you know, once they've left us, I think that's the key moment.
For example, we've had a guy that's come back recently. He was in our group just before COVID. So he was that group that when COVID happened, he lost his job straight away. We found him another job after COVID got back. Started working at Penguin Random House. He's been there for a long time, but he doesn't feel like he's going anywhere. So we encouraged him to apply for a job yourself. So he started applying. He's not sure, he's really nervous. Anyway, he's got a trial today at CSE's at the Gherkin. Fingers crossed he may have it. But he's someone that actually, we do support them, but it gets to a stage where actually they need to support themselves. So he's at a stage where actually he can get a job anyway, just needs the confidence, which I've kind of pushed through him a little bit and helped him a little bit. But we're always on the phone. We're always, you know, a coffee away. We're always whatever. We don't switch off because we are passionate about what we do.
Yeah, and you know, we do support anybody that wants our support. But there's a point where we let them contact us rather than us be in touch with them when it comes to a few years down the line. But people know that they can come back to us at any time. And yeah, COVID was a good example. We had lots come back. But they're all back in jobs now, majority of them are.
Yeah, that was hopefully a one-off spectacular event.
There was a lot of learning from it.
Yeah.
With COVID, when we obviously, the hospitality industry was struck pretty hard. And a lot of people I know who were in hospitality before have been uncertain about going back in out of fear that the pandemic, you know, something might happen again and jobs are insecure and whatnot. How do you feel it's affected the guys that you're working with? Is there a nervousness around a lack of certainty within the sector?
Not really. I think hospitality is back to its booming. It's not as it was at the beginning of lockdown. Actually, there's more careers than there's ever been. and there's more and more coming up. There's thousands of jobs out there. People that tell me there's no jobs, you just keep on looking. There's jobs out there. And I think actually it will only get stronger and stronger. There's new places open up every day. As long as you're someone, as long as you want to work, there's jobs out there. It doesn't have to be hospitality neither. Hospitality could be that footway into something else.
And the skills are so transferable. But we, when we guide people into jobs as well, we're very mindful of being a good employer. So we avoid sort of zero-hour contracts. So we kind of take them through that step of choosing the right employer. It's got to be right for them and the employer. And quite often, you know, some of our beneficiaries will turn down a role because they don't feel the connection with that employer. And that's okay. You know, it's good to be choosy because you're looking at this for the long haul rather than a quick fix.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. The other side of it, I guess, is the, you know, hospitality typically is quite unsociable hours. Is that something, you know, thinking about working with people if they've got children and how they can fit that around it? Is that kind of conversations that you're having with the guys that you're working with as well?
Yeah, we always talk about what works for them and what's right for them. So we never try and encourage them into a role that wouldn't fit in with their lifestyle. But you've also got to remember, we're supporting people with mental health issues, who are recovering alcoholics from drug addiction. So being in that restaurant environment isn't always a good environment with alcohol. And we're mindful of that. But, you know, that temptation's always going to be there for people. Yeah. So they have to learn to manage that. So, you know, some people might opt to work in a coffee shop for a little while they kind of build their resilience against their addictions.
I suppose being in that kind of tempting place with support around you is the healthiest way to consider it, as opposed to doing it on your own.
The other thing with hours, so with chefing, that's what I used to think. I was kind of actually scared of the industry because I thought, oh, it's long hours, it's double shifts, it's this, it's that. But you choose what suits you. So if you want to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, contract catering. You want to work in a restaurant, yeah, you'll do shifts, but you might be off in the morning, you might be off in the evening. You want to do events, weekends, football stadiums, you name it. There's different, if you want to put kids, you can work in schools. It's different avenues that you can go down, and you can more or less choose your path. Once you've started, you do your initial groundwork, you choose where you want to go.
Yeah, once you've got those basic skills, you can choose. And we've got some really great partners like Coates, CEC's. We work with Charlie Biggins. They all offer opportunities that are different sort of catering opportunities.
How important is that pipeline of supportive employers that understand who you are as an organisation? Because that's where a lot of homeless organisations in the catering space, like you guys, that struggle, because actually it's finding those partners that get it.
What we try and do is embed our partners in our programs, so we get them along to some of the workshops. They come on some of the walk and talk to us, so they get to know the beneficiaries. And that way they understand where the people are coming from. But we are quite picky with our partnerships as well, you know. If we're going to partner with somebody, it's got to be a meaningful partnership, and we expect people to invest in us, not only financially, but our beneficiaries. What are the opportunities for them? So it could be work experience, or it could be an apprenticeship. Charlie Biggins, for example, offers us a tour as part of our program around his factory, so people get to see a different side of catering, you know, that mass catering.
Do you find that easy, that these restaurant companies, they say, actually, we'd like to do this, or is it something you have to sort of fight your way in with?
No, I think once you've put the opportunity in front of them, they're open to it. I don't think it's an opportunity that many see. So until you kind of go, well, this is how it could work, then they're a bit more, oh, actually, yeah, that works. So Coates, for example, we're sort of still tinkering on developing that partnership, but they've invited us to the restaurant. Our beneficiaries for the first time went, for many of them, went into a restaurant and ordered off the menu, and Coates facilitated that. And they've been in and seen sort of how we work with our beneficiaries, and they're very much open. You know, what, we should start employing individuals directly from you to help that process.
And how long is that? I just know that people listening will be interested in that as a concept. How long does that take between sort of initial contact to embedding them as employer partners?
It depends really on the partners, what they're looking to impact. So we will build our partnership around what their needs are and what our needs are. And we're not negotiable on it either. So if it doesn't marry up, then there's no point to the partnership. We don't do anything for lip service. We're very, you know, we want it transparent and clear. So it can take anything from 6 months to 2 years. And if people aren't ready for a partnership with us because they can't offer the opportunities for our beneficiaries, what we can do, they can run events in the restaurant. You know, we can host a dinner, run parties. So there's still opportunities for them to bring money into the charity without necessarily taking the engagement.
Without taking on the big responsibility, the partnership sort of approach. I'm really interested in this. It's such a difficult thing to get right and to lead those companies often. Often they really want to do it and the goodwill is there. You really sometimes have to take the bull by the horn and lead them. And have you found that that's had an impact on those companies and how they treat their own employees as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the significant changes is where the corporate then identifies that the staff need to know where their fundraising is going. So engaging their staff and bringing them into the restaurant and running events for their staff to attend brings them much closer to the charity and the purpose. And I think that's what's created a closer bond between the corporates that we work for. And I should say as well that we're really fortunate. We work with an events company called Creme Conferences, and they take the professional management of our events. So that really relieves our five staff of having to run these big events. So they're organised and they do that to support the charity. So we are really fortunate for that partnership as well.
It sounds like the whole thing runs on partnerships. It's quite nice. But it sounds like genuine partnerships that actually work for everyone involved rather than one party.
And evolving, you know, so it's so unusual to have, I think, so many sort of charity corporate partnerships are based on individual relationships, which is wonderful, but it also means that, you know, they're quite short-lived often. And so to be seeing partnerships evolve as you are is brilliant to see. On the flip side of that, one of the aspects of this podcast is we like to talk about learning and learning through mistakes and what's gone wrong and how we've, you know, see it afterwards. Have you got any experiences of partnerships or initiatives, programs, you know, relationships that you've gone, that didn't work?
So for me, from a work placement side of it, yeah, we've worked with certain organisations. I won't say any names or anything. For me, it was a learning curve. So we used to have all different organisations that say they want to partner with us. They want to get in. They want to take beneficiaries. I'd go and see the place. I'd meet the chef. I'd briefly go and get an idea of the place myself. I'll send the beneficiary on a trial. They'll start working there. I'll go there monthly for catch-ups and things. And then constantly there's things coming up and you're starting to get, not red flags, but you're like, you think to yourself, is this the right environment for our beneficiaries? Coming from nothing to somewhere full on doing 300 covers a day, it's the wrong environment, no matter how supportive it is. So actually they need a lower step first and then a bigger step after. So that was a learning curve for me. So it's like, actually don't set them up to fail in those big places. So one or two people did successful, but a few of them, it's very intimidating. And also chefs, so some chefs can have some really fiery personalities. For me, they're the wrong chefs to be training anyone, and that's not, I would never send anyone in any kind of environment that I knew that was a shouty, sweary environment, for example. In Brigade we're calm, and that's what we expect of any other partner that we partner with.
What kind of questions do you ask when you're going around, you know, I didn't realize how involved you were in sort of scouting out the partner opportunities as well. What kind of questions are asked of those?
For me, obviously the pay they're going to want to know about, the how many covers the restaurant's doing, what the shift patterns are. So for example, if you're putting someone on a 10-hour day, 5 days a week, they're going to burn out. They're used to working 40 hours a week. Whereas if you put them on a 40-hour contract to start with, it makes more sense. How long has your members of staff stayed there? How long has the head chef been there? What's your retention like? Look at a few reviews online, maybe. I don't know. You want to get a feel for the place. For me, I don't like to just send someone something I have no knowledge or anything about the place.
Yeah, and we've got some really positive partners who constantly take people from us as well.
So we know they're good. Yeah.
What would be your advice? This podcast is engaging with audiences that are looking at social enterprise. What would be your advice to them as somebody starting out, setting up something similar, or, you know, supporting vulnerable people back into work or into work for the first time? Yeah, what advice would you be giving to them?
Mine is only two things, probably. Make sure it makes business sense.
Okay.
And make sure it's got a purpose. And the purpose is clear.
And mine would be surround yourself with good partnerships. Know who you need them to be, because you don't have to do everything yourself. And just making sure that, you know the environment that you're working in, and yeah, play to the strengths of it.
I think that's three really good tips.
Brilliant. I think you've both really come across as such integrity on how you work, and it's obviously so deliberate and thoughtful and, you know, in it for the right reasons. It's really nice to see people work in a sector who love to do what they do. So yeah, I really appreciate you both coming and sharing your experiences with us as well. it's really nice for the listeners and for us as well, because, you know, our jobs are much more on the outside kind of looking in. So it's, yeah, it's really great to see what's happening. Any kind of last statement or is there any other organisations that you're working with that you think they're doing it really good as well?
I mean, we work with some great organisations. I mean, the Felix Project is one. That's been a good partnership. Are we looking for any partners? I mean, anybody who's out there who kind of wants to partner, we'd love a conversation, and they can email me, jo@beyondfood.org.uk, or go to our website and people can donate there as well.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe for more episodes or follow us on Twitter @thismuch_weknow or email us at thismuchweknow@homelesslink.org.uk.